Bath and West Wiltshire's Radio Bath.
I'm very pleased to be joined by Zoe Chandler. She's tax manager with Milstead Langdon, who are a big firm of accountants around the South West, and indeed, I think, offices in London, and very good friends of Radio Bath. Good morning, Zoe.
Morning.
Good to have you here. And this is an important week, isn't it? We've got to digest what happened in the budget and what it means, not just for our pockets today, but how we're going to behave going forward.
Yes.
So yeah. What do you think was the main messages that came out of the budget?
So I think that obviously the main message, which is something that they've been repeating since their manifesto, was that they didn't want to tax working people. And obviously there's been a lot in the news about what is a working person, how do you define this? And I think as a result of the budget, they have more or less stuck to that overall message. There are no increases in VAT, income tax on salaries, and national insurance on salaries. So they have more or less stuck to that messaging. And actually the tax rises that they have introduced are to target a different demographic. So they have stuck to their manifesto promise.
Well, that's amazing, because we were being warned beforehand, and I think a little bit like Halloween, there's a tendency of the media and indeed the government to put out some scary messages in advance and then just sort of step back and say, no, we were never going to do that, of course. But they seem to have played that quite well this time.
Yes.
And she said that she doesn't want this to be a sort of budget that she has to do again. This is a one-off budget to repair the damage from the previous government.
Yes, I think one of the things that came out very clear was that they want stability. So they have committed to doing one budget a year, no mini budgets, no spring surprise budget, with very clear roadmaps for the next 5 years, the next 10 years for some of their plans. So that will hopefully help people to plan, because I think the uncertainty that we have had in previous budgets means that it's been almost impossible to plan anything, plan life, plan business. That came out really clear, was the stability they promised.
And on that point, actually, we've been seeing some in the news today that the International Monetary Fund have said that they considered it a stabilising budget. So it's got the sort of, if not the thumbs up, it's sort of the thumbs sideways and slightly raised from the IMF, which is about as good as any Chancellor gets these days. So where will us ordinary folks, and I include Radio Bath presenters in working folks, where will we be most impacted, do you think?
So as I said, there's no increases to taxes on working people, but obviously one of the announcements was the increase to employers' national insurance, and there's some speculation about whether this will have a knock-on impact on people's wages, because this means that businesses now have a higher cost to employ staff. So there's two ways that they try to cover those costs. They either increase the prices of their goods, or they try to reduce the wages of their staff, or they hire less staff. So it remains to be seen how that will play out. Either it will play out through higher prices for goods and services, or it might play out through reduced wages and reduced employment opportunities. So I think that's something that businesses are going to have to think about their strategy, but that could be where it impacts the working person the most.
Is there any concern about the fact that they've put up quite dramatically, in fact, the minimum wages, particularly for younger people? It seems like a good thing to do, but...
Yeah, again, I do think it's a good thing, because I think without those increases, we end up in a race to the bottom almost. But what I'm slightly concerned about is whether it will then have an impact of sort of crunching wages together. So actually, for a role that's slightly more senior or more experienced, the wage is not as much as people would expect, because of the cost of hiring at the minimum wage sort of crunches the wage bands together. So I think there's a slight concern about that. But I think it's a good thing in general, because otherwise, like I said, we have a race to the bottom. Who can pay the least? You know, we should value people's time and labour and effort, and it means that people have more money in their pocket to then put money into the economy, spend their money in the economy, and they're less reliant on sort of benefits, which, you know, that negates the effect of having a lower minimum wage.
So there's good news insofar as wages haven't been hit directly by taxes in the same way that they might have been done previously. There's a slight concern that wage increases going forward will be a little bit more suppressed as the cost of employing people goes up for the employers. There's also a slight concern, isn't there, that, as you said, some of the prices might rise a little bit, and we might see, if not a return to inflation, a reluctance on the Bank of England to drop their interest rates as quickly as they might have been intending.
Yeah. And again, when she announced some of the figures, she did say that inflation would actually slightly increase next year, followed by then a decrease in the following year. So I think they're expecting for it to get slightly worse before it gets better. But obviously there has been a large drive towards reducing that inflation through interest rates. And I think the Bank of England probably will wait to see how the dust settles from this before making reductions.
So for a household with a property with a mortgage, we might not see too much impact on our wages and our take-home pay in that sense. We might see prices go up a little bit to begin with. And if we've got a mortgage, we won't see that coming down. I think they're still talking about 3.5 by 2029, which seemed a long way away, but we'll come around all too quickly, I'm sure. But it probably means that we're going to see small quarter percent changes for a time to come, do you think?
Yes, and again, that again represents stability. It's a stable reduction back down to where we were, rather than anything drastic was happening overnight. So I think, again, that's a good thing.
It is, yeah. And fuel, no changes on fuel duty? And
no. So again, she kept that the 5p cut that's been lingering, and also frozen, so it doesn't increase with inflation. So that's staying where it is.
Good. So day-to-day life doesn't seem to be too heavily impacted from the point of an employee, a worker.
Yes, yeah. And I think that was kind of some of the strategic thinking that went into this budget, is how can we fill this, you know, this 20 billion black hole that was talked about, and actually, you know, increase the amount of money that we can raise to then fund public services without making a noticeable impact on everyday life. And I think it seems from the policies they've announced that they would have achieved that, but obviously remains to be seen as the dust settles. But
and when do you think we'll know where some of that additional funding is going to be directed? I mean, we all imagine NHS, but there's so many calls on the public purse these days.
Yeah, so they made a few announcements. They announced, you know, more affordable homes, so house building. They did announce some extra funding for the NHS to try and bring waiting lists down and try and increase the number of operations that are being done. So I think those are probably the key areas that they're looking at, those two areas. And obviously before the budget was even announced, they had already announced large pay rises for public sector workers. So I think it's already clear where they intend to invest the money. Yeah, I think we'll wait to hear more.
I got this so wrong, as you know. When I was a public sector worker, we had a lower wage than people in the private sector, but we had a sense of vocation, probably, which was part of the reason we were there, whether you were teachers or civil servants or whatever, and you accepted that lower pay. And in return, you did have more tenure, more certainty of employment, and, of course, that lovely pension if you worked through for 30 years. Now it seems that people in the public sector are getting paid almost or more so than people in the private sector. It has been a sea change over the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, and I think that's probably to address some of the real terms pay cuts that those workers would have been having. So I think it's probably correct that some of those pay rises should be made, especially for NHS workers, nurses in particular.
So if people at that sort of working age won't see too much change in the foreseeable future, when we come to pensions, it's a slightly different story, isn't it?
Yes, so for the first time, pensions potentially now subject to inheritance tax. And what that possibly means is that for people passing on a pension to their beneficiaries, often their children, there's possibly an effective rate of tax of 67%, because there's inheritance tax and then income tax on the beneficiaries. And I think what the government is trying to drive there is that people have worked hard all of their lives, they've saved, they've built up, you know, the substantial wealth in their pensions, and then they often live quite frugally, thinking, I'll leave this nest egg for my children. But actually what the government is saying is, that's your money, you worked hard for it, so spend it in the economy, you know, have a nice retirement, go on holidays, spend the money, because otherwise, you know, a large chunk of it could be taken for inheritance tax. But that shouldn't be seen as a punishment, it should be seen as an encouragement to spend it and feel comfortable to spend it.
I've always had a bit of an ambivalent attitude towards people handing money down through inheritance tax. I don't have children myself, but I know that it's something that instinctively as a parent you want to be able to do. Where I'm concerned about it, as a historian of welfare, I know that in the past people used to go from rags to riches and back again several times through the course of their lives. When they started working, they earned money. When they got married, there was less money to spend because it was largely coming down to one income. When they were ill, they were expected to spend their own savings to look after themselves, and that included in retirement if they didn't have children to look after them. So you sort of just try to get to the end of your life with the right amount of money, basically one pound left in the bank. What has concerned me from a slightly more objective point of view is that creates a sort of them and us in the next generation. There are people of a certain age who will inherit houses, who will inherit large amounts of wealth, and other people who won't, and it does worry me that perhaps that's driving some of this disparities between people who can afford their own homes and can't.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I think the statistics show that the wealth gap is sometimes largest actually between millennials and Generation X, in those that have an inheritance and those that don't, and those that had help onto the housing ladder and those that don't. So I think even amongst generations, let alone between two different generations, just amongst one generation, there's a big wealth divide. Yeah, I do think that that's an issue. And I think in one way that taxing pensions to inheritance tax does kind of even it out a little bit, because there are, you know, lots of people who perhaps weren't able to acquire a pension but might have acquired other assets, and then perhaps unfairly those were taxed while pensions weren't. So it kind of puts everyone on a slightly more level playing field, because no matter where your store of wealth, it will be subject to inheritance tax rather than pensions previously being protected.
And you're no better than I that wherever there's a loophole, people tend to find it and use it, and that really distorts behaviour as well. So if you're trying to create a certain type of behaviour, you can't afford to leave loopholes, otherwise clever people like yourself will find a way through it. I also like the fact that my favourite pastime now, no longer fit enough to play rugby, is skiing, and of course that acronym comes into its own with spending the kids' inheritance. I thought that was a very nice one. So the message going out from certainly this Chancellor is work hard, save some money, put it aside, look after yourself and your family, but don't hoard it. Don't expect to try and take it with you or give it to the next generation intact.
Yes, or if you do intend to give things to the next generation, it's perhaps doing that a stage earlier. So with inheritance tax, gifts that are made within 7 years of death are actually then exempt. So if you're considering a gift, then consider it perhaps earlier, and then that gives the next generation a chance to get, you know, a step ahead before they are already approaching retirement age themselves.
Yeah, so it's a use it now, basically. If you're not going to use it, give it to a generation that can, which I think is, I see a lot more people going off and travelling and finding themselves at an earlier age. Fabulous. One thing that surprised me a little bit, since 2008, of course, interest rates for savers have been, for the most part, pretty poor. Or negligible. And of course, the stock market's been at times very volatile, 2008, 2016, etc. And of course, through COVID. So for many ordinary people, any money that we had to put aside, it was very tempting to buy a little flat and rent it out. Only in the last few years, we've become increasingly vilified as the evil landlord, which actually I take offence to slightly, because I think I'm quite quick to get things fixed. But, you know, I know that in any group of people, there are good and bad people. And certainly, it's not defensible to have landlords who are just taking money out and not looking after the habitation. But we have all been sort of tarred with the same brush, I think. I mean, it's just got harder and harder, and I've got mortgages on those, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I should sell them, but maybe that opportunity is already gone because capital gains on those properties has gone up and up. So it's been really a question of, well, I'm not sure what to do. But I think the Chancellor sent a fairly clear message about what she wants us to do through the budget, didn't she?
Yes. So one of the interesting things they did was they increased the rate of stamp duty land tax, otherwise known as SDLT, on additional property purchases from 3% to 5%. So not a huge increase, but still a significant 2 percentage points. But at the same time, everyone was anticipating this large increase in capital gains tax. I think there was reports of perhaps 39% or 33%. But actually what happened is it remained at 18% and 24%, which is the current rates. So I think what the messaging there is that it's now more expensive to acquire another property, so it's more expensive to expand a property portfolio. But actually, if you are thinking of reducing that property portfolio, especially as you perhaps head into retirement and have less time to spend on, you know, getting repairs done, then actually reducing the size of the portfolio is no more expensive than it was, because the capital gains tax increase just didn't have the
job. And that gives us time to get things out into the market in a more controlled way, because really wants to see the market flooded or starved of properties. So an even dispersal rate will keep everybody happy.
Yes, and I think by announcing that change to come in overnight, that helped, because if they had perhaps announced that that change was coming in April, there would have been a large rush to the market, and perhaps another spike in property prices, which is the last thing that people want. So I think that was a good move to announce it immediately.
Well, we've covered off an awful lot of the effect of the budget on ordinary people's lives, but we have a particular community here, obviously, in the Southwest, who are a little unhappy, aren't they, about what's been taking place in the budget.
Yes, so there's a lot of concern from farmers, and indeed people, not necessarily farmers, but who actively support farming in their community, so they might go to farmers markets and support that. And obviously there's a lot of concern and worry about the changes that were announced to inheritance tax, specifically for farmers, in the form of a relief called agricultural property relief. So previously this was an uncapped relief at 100%, so it meant that farmers could pass on the family farm to their next generation without paying any inheritance tax. The change that was announced is that that's now capped at £1 million at 100%, and then anything over that is now 50%. So it means that potentially family farms will have a significant inheritance tax liability when they are passed to the next generation, perhaps meaning that actually the family farm then has to be sold, or part of it has to be sold to cover this liability. So that has caused a lot of worry amongst farmers as a result. And I think that the key message that I would say is that actually, you know, there's still options, there's still things that can be done. So again, going back to our point earlier, you can pass these things down a generation much sooner than perhaps you would have done, bringing the next generation into the business, encouraging them to take that forward, and then sort of not having to hold that property until death and then have this inheritance tax liability is one option. And actually, some statistics show that through planning and through using these reliefs in ways that are available, that only perhaps 500 farms will be affected by this change, mm-hmm. and they would be 500 of the largest farms. So I think there's still options, and the people shouldn't be as concerned and as worried as they are.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. I'm not from a farming sort. I grew up on farms, funnily enough, but I wasn't a farmer, which is probably we're all very glad of. But I know that the arable land, I think, per acre in this part of the world is something like £8,500 an acre.
Yes.
And that would suggest, therefore, that if you've got more than about, 100, 120 acres on your farm, that you could be caught by that.
Yes, indeed. So precisely about 100 acres, you know, about just under £10,000 per acre, sometimes more, could mean that it's over that £1 million and therefore an inheritance tax liability creeps in. But it's important to remember that it's per individual. So perhaps for a married couple, mm-hmm. There's actually £2 million. So that will assist. And also planning so that on first death, some of the farm actually goes to the next generation, so that you don't then have an inheritance tax liability on the second death, for example. But also, like I said, it is just planning ahead and thinking perhaps let's move this down a generation much earlier, bringing the next generation into the business much sooner than perhaps would have been done.
Well, I can understand why farmers are nervous about this. I mean, that's quite a huge marginal increase, isn't it? But the good thing about farmers, of course, is that they have got an ability to look forward much more longer term than most of us. And if they get early into the planning for this, it should be possible to alleviate or even completely reduce their tax liability when the changeover comes to the next generation.
Yes, precisely. And I think the good thing about farmers as well is they often do have that very close family connection. They often do have very strong families, so they're able to have those conversations. Not every business owner would perhaps be in the same position. They might have children who are not interested in the family business, but farming families tend to be quite close-knit.
Yeah. And I know you take a great interest in not just the facts and figures that arise out of the tax, but the reasons why they might have been included, what the Chancellor is trying to persuade us to do through our pockets. Farmers seem to have a hard enough time as it is in this country. Why do you think she's focused on this particular change?
Yeah, so what I think this is trying to drive is that there's been a noticeable increase in the last couple of decades in the very wealthy individuals acquiring farmland as a store of wealth for inheritance tax planning. So
right.
James Dyson, for example, owns vast swathes of land. I think it's been seen as something that's not very fair because, you know, large swathes of farmland are completely exempt from inheritance tax, and often tenant farmers are doing the hard work but not seeing the benefit of those inheritance tax reliefs. And I think what the Chancellor is perhaps hoping will happen is that it will lead to a breakup of those larger farms, enabling more smaller farmers to actually be able to purchase a farm for the first time, because all of a sudden you've got perhaps 2,000 acre farms being split into smaller 200 acre farms and sold off because the inheritance tax relief is no longer there.
Yeah.
So I think that's what she was trying to drive. Mm-hmm. I think perhaps what she might have missed or underestimated is the value of small farms, and actually whether that limit of £1 million should have been slightly more than £1 million, just to make sure that it doesn't affect small farms, I think probably would have been fairer. Having said that, there's a lot of consultation to be done around the rules, so she is probably open to hearing from lobbying groups. And I know Jeremy Clarkson's been quite active on social
no
media.
No way. Jeremy Clarkson vocal? I've never heard it.
And some other farmers, Gareth Wynne-Jones, a famous Welsh farmer, they've been quite openly speaking about it. So I think she will be open to hearing some different views.
So she's basically put that out there and said, right, you come back and tell me why I'm wrong or why I need to sort of moderate this. I suppose in a strange way, it's quite consistent with what she's been doing with landlords with small portfolios. She's sort of gently encouraging us to break them up, to put the property back into the marketplace so that it becomes affordable for everybody. Yes, I think we'll hear more about that, certainly around here. Well, Zoe, thank you so much indeed for coming in. That's been really, really informative. And we get blasted with all the sorts of detail of the budget when it comes out, as if we're supposed to be able to understand it and the implications and why it's been done. I think sometimes politicians forget to tell us why things are being done, which, you know, if we understand, we can at least say, well, OK, I get that. It's been really helpful to have you coming in. And we can now put the budget aside. It's going to be a year until we... I hope it won't be a year before we see you back in here. But in the meantime, we can concentrate on things like fireworks night and, of course, the C word, Christmas, coming up very, very shortly. Thanks a lot.
This is Radio Bath. Radio Bath.